Welcome to the Quick Talk Podcast with Joshua Latimer, where we discuss business, life, family, faith, struggle, fire, pain, and ultimately winning.
It's time to take massive action. Look, I can't work harder on your life or business than you do.
It's ultimately all on you.
You know, God created all the food the birds would ever need, but he doesn't put it in their nest. You've got to go get it.
10 out of 10 people die. So how about doing something today that actually matters while you still can? Hey, everybody, Josh here. Welcome to the Quick Talk Podcast. I hope you are prepared to have the merriest Christmas of the most merriness that is possible to have in terms of merriness. That made no sense. But hey, Merry Christmas to you and your family. Can you believe that a whole year has gone by? It's like I blinked and we're here and it's going to be 2018 and I'm freaking out and it's just crazy, but it's a great time to reflect. And today I have a special guest on the line with me, Mr. Sid Graff, which many of you probably know who he is because he's super active on social media. He's extremely helpful. He has a YouTube channel and some Facebook videos he puts out. He does interviews. He does a window cleaner's brain trust on the internet. He's always trying to add value as he goes along his journey. Now, he has a cleaning company out in Missoula. I'll let him explain that. But he's been in the business for over 15 years, and I'll tell you, Sid has made massive strides the last few years to really automate his business, or as he likes to call it, he's built a self-managing business. For example, I know earlier this year he went on vacation for a couple weeks, and he had let me know. He said, Josh, I was gone for 2 weeks, and when I came back, I had more money than when I left on vacation, and I only got one text message the whole time. So Sid, thank you for sharing some wisdom with us today. Merry Christmas. How are you?
Josh, thank you so much, and Merry Christmas to you. Thanks. What a great introduction. It makes me sound like I must be pretty cool. Thank you.
Yeah, my job is to make you sound like the superhero that you are, Sid. You really are. And without all the flattery, honestly, I respect you very much. You're highly intelligent, and you're doing really, really interesting things with your business. I know you're also going to be a speaker here. Is it the end of January? Is it in Vegas at the ICE convention?
Yeah, it's February 1st and 2nd in Las Vegas.
Okay, February 1st and 2nd. I don't know if you want to give a little background first to get people up to speed, but I'd really like to talk about this whole concept of a self-managing business and just lay down your perspective on business and life. What's been going on in your world?
Yeah, sure. And I'll give you a little bit of backstory to understand. For a lot of people, you know, having a turnkey business or having a real business running might not be a big idea. It may be quite normal, but for me, it was like a miracle. Because I grew up in West Texas on a little farm, and at age five, like all my brothers before me, I was given a garden hoe and sent out to the cotton fields to chop weeds. And what we did, it was work. That's what my family did. You get out and you work. You work with your hands, the thing that is good, and that's what you do. And I never considered having an employee or having something, you know, like have an automated weed picker instead of a garden hoe. So when I started my first business, actually in 1993 in Florida, it was just me and a bucket and a whole lot of grit and hustle. I mean, and I was never afraid to work because that's how I grew up. So I grew, you know, started a business. It wasn't a business. It was just me with a squeegee and working hard and doing everything myself. And then we actually grew that business a little bit. I sold it. We moved to Montana. And in 2003, so right 15 years ago, we started the company here and started from scratch with literally $5 and a lot of grit and hustle. And it was that way for about 7 years, just me and a guy working our butts off trying to make ends meet. And when I started studying marketing, that opened my eyes to a lot more about business, where like I didn't have to knock on every door to get new business. I could do things that were automated or that would duplicate me in the field, and people would just call that I'd never met or talked to. And I was like, oh my God, this is a miracle. Like, we didn't struggle for business anymore. And then of course, well, there's a larger story, but maybe I'll cut it short.
No, that's great. And I think my biggest takeaway of your first little intro there was that working hard and having automated business, it's like, well, let me rephrase this. A lot of the people that I work with and help that are stuck and their marriages are stressful and they're a slave to their company and it's just harder than they ever thought. The reason their business is failing has nothing to do with their level of effort. A lot of times, sometimes it does for sure, but a lot of people work their butts off, like you said, but they're just, it's like beating their head against a wall. What are they doing wrong? What was the epiphany you had to help change your mind?
Yeah. Before I answer that, you probably know this feeling. And if the last 2 years has been the first time that's happened to me. So for years and years, making ends meet was a constant struggle. I mean, it was if we were short, I'm like, okay, I'll go work on Saturday. I'll do an extra house. But struggle. And then going into winter when things go quiet was the most stress you can imagine. So I've got a lovely wife and 4 children, but everybody still has to eat, even though no money's coming in. And I've lived like that for 13 years, but this year is a great example. Going into winter, we already have enough money set aside to handle payroll for 3 full-time employees, even if we don't get a nickel coming in. We've got enough money set aside to handle like Christmas and 4 months of no income without a concern. And that makes such a difference in your marriage, in your family. You know, you don't get frustrated with your kids so easily. You make decisions more easily when you've got some financial stability. I won't say freedom, but at least stability. So that's a big deal. The feeling like you almost feel like you can walk on water. You know you can't, but.
Oh, it's a huge deal. And life is not about money. And the reason we exist on this planet isn't about money. But when you have extreme financial pressure in your life, you make horrible decisions because it's all rooted in fear. It's all rooted in scarcity. You can't see clearly. You can't make intelligent investments. Everything is short term. It's like, and I do know that feeling. The life of an entrepreneur is like, it's full of uncertainty. Financial uncertainty is part of the deal. But your business has pivoted the last few years. And I know last time we talked, which is why I was excited to ask you to come on the podcast and share this, you made some intentional changes to your company, to the way that things are working, that have directly massively increased your profitability, taken you out of the business much more, given you freedom and given you this buffer and this security so that you can be clear-headed. But it didn't happen overnight, did it? What happened?
Once I thought about it, then I decided to do it. And then once I started to implement things, it took about 2 years to see, it's like turning a big ship. You don't just turn around and do a 180 U-turn. It takes a little time. You got things moving. But some of the things I did were very specific. One was it all starts with like planting a seed in your head. So I talked about that work ethic of the West Texas farm boy. I grew up thinking you've got to do everything yourself. And you've probably finished this phrase. A lot of people say, if you want something done right, you have to do it yourself. Right. But is that true?
It's definitely not true. But it does sound warm and fuzzy. It sounds true. But I know that intellectually it's not true. How did this happen?
Yeah. I mean, there are plenty of people that are, I hate to admit it, they're better snowplow drivers than I am. They're better with other people than I am. They're better. I have guys on my team that squeegee twice as fast as I ever did. I've got people that do things better than me. I hired rock climbers to do all our high rise work. I've swung off a 20-story building and I'm okay at it. I don't really like it. But I've got guys now that they're like always asking, like, when are we going to swing again? When do we get a new building? I'm like, oh, man. And they're good. So that's just in the context of, our immediate business. So when I realized, why am I trying to do every single thing? The first thing I did was hire somebody to keep my books because the biggest frustration and struggle for me, I suck at it. I like knowing what the numbers are, but data entry, I'd rather shove a fork in my eye than type it in the computer.
Oh man, we are kindred spirits with that.
Yeah. And then I hired a company to do our payroll. And it made me very nervous at first because it had all this accountability. It's like no longer could I write a check and hope I had the money on Friday. The payroll company escrows all the money on, a week in advance. And then they do direct deposit and they pay the IRS and they do all the things for me. But you talk about relieving stress. I mean, I'm knowing with confidence that it's done right and I didn't have to think about it. And I can tell you very clearly, the first time I stripped a check to an accountant to do our taxes, my hand was shaky because it was like $1,900. But at the same time, I remembered the previous 3 years I did on my own. The last time I did on my own, kept track. It took me 42 hours of abject frustration. And I went, ha, this $2,000 replaced 40 hours of hell. And I was shaking because I didn't want to spend the money because that's my the old upbringing. but I was so thrilled that I didn't have to fool with it. So I started making those kind of changes in business. So I just replaced this, And then, you know, I hired a guy that's our production manager, and his job is to make sure all the bands are ready. All the guys are, you know, knew their schedule. And then we implemented an actual training curriculum where I wasn't field training every single new person the SID way. Me and one of my guys sat down and we worked out a curriculum, and then we shot video and we put it up online in a secure site where the new guy, before they come in the first day, they already know what a kit and a caddy and a squeegee and a scraper, you know, they know all the tools. They've never touched it, but they're familiar, and they know how the belt goes on and which side the blue towels and the up, all those things are done. And so every single time a new person comes in, they know it the same way that everybody else knows it. So nobody's making up their own system. Everything is uniform. And man, that took a load off, because now that, you know, the time frame from new hire to profitable productivity went from 2 to 3 weeks down to about 4 days. Like, whoa, who knew? But it all started with like the seed of a shift of the mind. I've got a good friend in Chicago who's a big time marketer and consultant, and he's the kind of guy, you know, he charges like $3,000 or $4,000 for a half a day kind of consultation. I asked him a few questions, and you know, he turns everything around. He asked me a question. He's like, well, how can you grow if you feel like you have to be there every single morning to high five every person and give them a pep talk? Can't somebody else do that? I'm like, well, no, that's my job. You know, I'm so emotionally attached. And then I realized after, like you mentioned, you know, I was gone on vacation. I was actually in Ireland for 2 weeks this summer. What happened while I was gone is the guys flourished even more without me than with me there. And when I got back there, it kind of like, hey, Sid, it's great to see you. How was your trip? And I was like, hey, should you do this? Do this? And they're like, can you please leave us alone? We've got this.
What? It's the greatest thing on the planet, but it's the most humbling thing. And I know exactly what you're talking about. It's the moment you realize that you're not as great as you thought you were, and that you were holding everything together, thinking that you're King Kong, but really everything was inefficient and small and weak and fragile because you were doing so much. And that if you can surround yourself with great people and give up a little control, things actually get better. It's amazing.
Yeah. I looked, you know, stepped back and looked at my business and realized that in every category, I was a bottleneck to the growth of my company. I was a bottleneck to training, bottleneck to, you know, the bookkeeping, the person that answers the telephone. I was just holding everybody back, not a bad way. I thought I was wonderful. I am wonderful, but I was slowing people down because I paced them down to the way I did things instead of, you know, it's like if you get a thoroughbred racehorse, you give them their head, you let the reins loose enough where they'll run. And if you're trying to control it, they won't go as fast.
Oh, that's a really good analogy. I never had thought of that. So, I mean, the harder you're pulling on the reins, the horse can't get into a rhythm to run at a high speed.
Do you want to hire people that are a step lower than you in capability, or do you want to hire somebody that's better than you?
I mean, the goal is to hire people better than you. I think, but this could turn into another 8-hour discussion, but let's go ahead and go down the rabbit trail for a second. You know, it's easy to say, just hire people better than me. Oh, geez, why didn't I think of that? You know, but that in and of itself is an entire system. It's an entire process. You know, Brian Hegarty has developed his amazing process, and you've developed one apparently. How does the little guy who's in fire put out crisis mode go hire someone better than him? What does that look like?
Okay, so that's like a beautiful question. And I'm going to go back to the planting a seed in your head thought. Like, it starts with a mindset. So before you read a book like Smart, it's all about how to hire, you know, top grading. And you figure out, you know, okay, you got to do this, you got to do that. Well, that's all tactical, maybe a little bit strategic. But if you don't believe that you are the type of person that a superstar would work for, you are not going to attract and you're not going to hire a superstar. Or if you do, they're not going to stay. Because if you don't believe you're worthy to have someone that's a super A player, then they will leave and find a place that's an environment where they can shine. So you've got to start with just understanding and like changing the way you view things. Like I made a specific change in the way I viewed my business to, instead of thinking that, hey, it's like a one-man operation with a couple of good guys, we're all buddies. I said, yeah, I shifted from you know, people in my community know me as the window cleaner. And I said, I don't want to be known as the window cleaner. I want to be known as Spectrum, to be known as the company that is involved in the community, that supports community. So we did, once I made that decision, well, it was our seventh year in business. I took seven nonprofits in the area, and each month for 7 months of our cleaning season, we made a donation of 10% of our proceeds to one of these nonprofits. There's the children's theater, the food bank, the children's shelter, things like that. And I'm not kidding. I mean, instantly people's changed the way they view. They're like, oh, shit, you're right. I got asked to be on the board of, you know, of the food bank. I serve on the board of the Missoula Children's Theater. They, you know, it was a shift in my thinking first, and it started with the decision, but I was like, I don't want to be just get the window guy. I want to be the people that know, like, he's the go-to guy in Missoula, like the unofficial mayor.
Yes.
And I didn't want it for glory, but I wanted to be viewed as that guy. And it took about 2 years. And this may not be true for everybody, but my experience has been usually from the time you shift the way you're thinking about something, it takes about 2 years for reality to catch up to it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Man. Oh, yeah. So much. I mean, I haven't talked about the mental side of entrepreneurship in a while, but I'm going through it myself. I mean, with my current core business, my software business, we're trying to 10x it next year, which honestly makes me want to throw up. And it's because we all have, including me, including people far beyond what I've done, and there's lots of those, we all have false belief patterns, and we don't really recognize them. I mean, I can't remember the exact Steve Jobs quote, but it was something along the lines of, you know, everything in the world, like the structure of how everything works, from government to infrastructure to driving on the right side of the road to the laws to the just social norms, everything is that way because somebody at some point just decided that it was supposed to be like that, right? We fall into this mental box that, oh, I can't be a respected entrepreneur in my community because I might come from poverty or whatever weird baggage is in your brain.
Yeah.
None of it's true. It's all fake, but it has a profound effect on you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. As I tell you, here's a great story. So Denise and I, when we got together before we had kids, we went to Europe to backpack in Europe for a year. So we were gone for a year. Most of that time was spent in the Mediterranean on the Greek islands. It sounds really sexy and wonderful, and it was, but until you realize that we had $300 in a one-way ticket. So the majority of the time we were there, we were homeless and broke in a foreign country. Now, we were on the beaches of the Mediterranean, so that was kind of cool. But I remember we showed up on the north shore of Crete because we had gotten a job. And we took the ferry boat in, and when we came in, there's this beach area. It's really beautiful. And there's a guy down at the end of the beach, and he was maybe 25, maybe 30. And he had three jet skis. And he sat there in a beach chair sipping pina coladas, and he'd rent them out. And that was his business. And it made me so angry and envious because I was like, that's not fair. He's getting paid. He's not even working. He doesn't lift a finger. It was absurd to me that someone could make a really solid income without actually doing any work. I mean, he like rented jet skis to beautiful women in bikinis all day. I'm like, you should be paying them. And even fast forward, I've got a good friend now. It's an online marketer, and he is a lifestyle entrepreneur. And his big thing is having this really cool lifestyle, and he does. And he works 10, 12 hours a week at the most. And he probably nets about $500,000 a year, and he's always skiing or at the beach or Hawaii. And when we first started becoming friends, I had this conversation with him personally, so he wouldn't mind me sharing. But I'm like, why that it seems unethical that you make that much money and you just play. And then we had a conversation. I was like, who made up that rule? Who says you have to work your butt off for 80 hours a week to be worthy of, you know, X number of dollars? Who made that rule? Now, I still believe firmly in value exchange. But if I sell you a Ferrari and you're willing to pay $1 million and I make 100,000, there's a lot of value exchange in that, and that's fair.
Well, it's not only fair, it's actually the way the universe works. I'm passionate about this topic because for me, I remember the first day I left my a two-person crew on a job site, and I left. And I didn't have anything to do, but it was like this symbolic moment early in my company. And I left and I went to the Chinese buffet to eat lunch with my mom, right? And I had a perma smile all the way to the buffet because I was earning money. There's still margin there, but I was doing nothing. But
yeah.
After about 30 minutes of being perma smile, I honestly felt guilty. And I battled that for several years until I understood this. And this is what I teach my three sons right now. You can walk up to my kids right now and I ask them this question randomly all the time. I say, boys, how do you make money? And, you know, the traditional answer is to work hard, but that is false. That is incorrect. The way you make money is by providing value. And whoever your friend is with the 10 hours a week apparently is providing $500,000 worth of value to the world, to the marketplace. Evidenced by the fact that people pay because customers vote with their wallet, right? And he's providing that value in 10 hours. So it's kudos to him. Working hard doesn't make you money. Working hard is admirable and it's important. And it's a very big piece of, you know, being a man or a woman. And it's there's value in it, but it's not how you make money.
Right. It's just an exchange of value. So then you, and a lot of that. And so, you know, my kids ask me questions, friends ask me questions. I go, a lot of times they'll ask a question like, well, how do you create that value? And I'm like, how deep do you want to go? I mean, do you want to just, because we can talk about stuff on the surface and go, well, you can dress it up. You know, your window cleaning service, you can leave a little, you know, leave them a mug with some chocolate chip cookies, you know, to add value, or you can do all this. But the value really comes down to that core deepest belief, like the innermost part of your heart or your mind of how you value yourself. How you and I don't want to get woo-woo and all that, but it's true. When you believe that you're a certain way, then it begins to, you start seeing that in the world. And it's just like I'm going to use you as an example. I don't know this. We've never talked about it, but I'm going to bet that at some point, probably in high school, when you met Ashley, your beautiful wife, and she's a lovely, kind soul. When you saw her, you probably thought to yourself, "There's no way this girl's going to talk to me," like. But it's somewhere in your mind, you're like, I'm going to do whatever it takes to meet her, to go out on a date with her because she's amazing. But you felt like inside, there's no way she wouldn't have anything to do with me. I'm just, you know, I deliver pizzas for her. I'm a window cleaner. Right.
Right. Totally true. Totally true. What's really crazy about it is that a lot of the beautiful women feel the same way. Like I've read something online about really good looking women have a hard time getting dates because no one will talk to them because everybody's horrified. And so they get insecure and think that something's wrong with them. There's all these mental games going on. It's hilarious.
And it's all literally, it's all head trash. It's all in your head. And you mentioned earlier, you're talking about, you know, the fluidity of life in that who decided we drive on the right and not on the left? Somebody. But there's so much fluidity in life. There are universal principles. There's gravity. You can't argue with gravity, but you can build an airplane to utilize gravity and other physics factors so you can fly. Great. But if you know, it's like if you've got your head stuck in, it's got to be this way. Well, that's how it's going to be. And it's just your believing. But you can change that. Sometimes a change comes from outside. Something happens. You know, I've got a friend that's a smoker. And we all, you know, smoking's not good for you, but he smoked since he was 25 and now he's 55. And he tried to quit 400 times, never could. He had a little heart issue, spent 2 days in the hospital, never touched another one. And his health is better now, 6 months later, than it was, you know, 10 years ago when he was in his 40s. Like sometimes that shift comes from outside, but genuinely, you know, usually it's like something you kind of have to work on.
Oh yeah, man. People don't fail at stuff in life typically because of an information problem. It's a behavior problem. And behavior isn't driven by logic. It's driven by emotion and self-limiting beliefs and false belief patterns and all this stuff in our head that's kind of hard-baked in there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I know you come from a Bible background, so do I. And you probably complete this sentence too. But when I grew up, you know, I remember my grandmother frying bacon and saying, and I said something about, you know, I was looking at the Sears and Roebuck catalog. I'm 7. And I'm looking at all these cool things that I want. I want this. I want this. And I said, I want to be rich. And she said, you know, son, it's harder for a rich man to enter the gates of heaven than for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle. And for a 7-year-old, yeah, I didn't know the biblical culture. The eye of a needle was referenced to a side gate that you know, it's the man door to your garage, not the bay door. Right. I'm like visualizing, how am I going to, you know, like take this camel apart, stick it through a sewing needle. And I concluded at the, you know, the wise age of seven that wealth was evil and you could never get to heaven. So you better be poor so you'd be worthy of God's love. And that goes deep. And how many, you know, so, you know, like we call it head trash. Like how many people have just some bizarro belief that was planted in their head when they were 5 or 10 or whatever, some thing, like you talked with, you know, the ladies, like the beautiful woman, her dad told her once that she would never amount to anything. So she believed she was homely when she was gorgeous.
Yeah, or believe she's worthless or she's not valuable. Man, you're igniting a fire in me. And if we could for a second, I don't talk a lot about this at all on the podcast. And I will be doing more of this in the future, but I know that a lot of the listeners to this podcast are believers or Christians. And one of the things that drives me nuts that I am so passionate about more than anything in my life is when a believer has issues with the stuff we're talking about, because it is the biggest trick and deception of Satan to get someone who is born. You're the child of a king. You are born to conquer. You are designed to build things and to defeat things and to win, period. No ifs, ands, or buts. But there's this wicked, just gross culture within Christianity that says, oh, well, we're supposed to, you know, well, just give it to the Lord. Just pray about it for 7 years and never start that second location. Don't take any risks. You're evil if you have wealth. Well, guess what? Who's going to fund the missionaries? Who's going to build the orphanages? Who's going to buy the plane tickets for the volunteers to go to the disaster relief? Entrepreneurs do that stuff. Wealthy people do that stuff. We're supposed to win, not so we can buy jet skis and live some crazy worldly life, but so that we can generate revenue and funnel it to what matters. It's one of the most passionate things on my heart is that issue. So I sidebarred, but I'm sick and tired of passive, spineless, cowardly Christian men specifically not going for it. You know, you need to build and go and do right now. No exceptions, no excuses.
Amen. You know, that's where the priest says, amen. That's probably why you and I get along so well, because that's like at the heart of it. We'll probably run out of time, so this will be my last story. I grew up going to church, you know, a regular Protestant church and everything. And of course, you know, in all my infinite wisdom, when I went to college, I said, that's garbage. I'm never going back. So I quit going to church. And I'm like, I'm going to go find the truth. And I started looking for all this other stuff. Well, years go by. I was in Greece, and I was sitting on the ruins walls of ancient Corinth with my soon-to-be wife. And I looked at her, and I was like, this is so amazing. We're looking at the sea, and I'm like, Corinth, isn't there something in the Bible about Corinth? And I thought she was going to push me off the wall. She's like, duh. How about try 1st and 2nd Corinthians or read the book of Acts? I mean, there's a lot about Corinth. And I went, oh. So I started reading. But I started reading the book of Corinthians without somebody preaching to me or telling me this is what you have to believe. And as I began to actually read and study the word, I discovered things that were exactly opposite of what I was taught in my Christian upbringing about wealth. One was, you know, I was taught that money is the root of all evil, not that the love of it, but, you know, basically if you're rich, you're evil, you suck. But then I read in, you know, like 3 John 2 is very clear. It says, beloved, I wish above everything that you, Josh Latimer, you, whoever's listening, would prosper and be in health. And man, that flew in the face of all the stuff I learned in church, because you're supposed to get sick because that's how God tests you. I mean, that's the lie that you get taught. But here in black and white, it's like, God says, I want you to prosper. And then I read Proverbs and I study, you know, King Solomon is the wealthiest man in the world. I'm like, he was God's man. Wow. How come he wasn't evil? He was, you know, he was Bill Gates of the era. And I went, huh, I think something was missing.
Well, a lot of it has to do, with, in my opinion, an orphan mentality. So there's a story. There's this couple at the church I used to go to, and they adopted a young girl from Russia. This is years ago. And they were so excited. I mean, they were a well-off family. They could not have children of their own. And they spent all this money and went through this long process, and they get this girl who is, in their mind, their absolute daughter. It's her birthright now. It's been transferred to her, right? They bring her home, and he wakes up one morning and walks downstairs, and this girl is eating out of the dog food bowl. and she's like 5 years old. And yeah. that story is just heart-wrenching as it is. It's true for Christian entrepreneurs and people that believe, because we do that. We pretend like we're orphans instead of sons and daughters. And there is a fine line with getting totally caught up in like this life and all of the worthless crap that's all going to burn anyway. Or going to the other extreme, saying that you're supposed to never have any resources. Well, guess what you can't do if you don't have any resources? You can't change the world. You can't do stuff. Not everybody's called to be an entrepreneur, but I personally believe that business is a ministry for some people, including me. And I'm a radical giver. I'm passionate about giving and inspiring people to give. But I never could have done what I've done if I wouldn't have broke through that orphan mentality and realized I'm the child of a king. Like I'm supposed to prosper. Like I have permission to do stuff and to try stuff and to fall down and scrape my knee and get up and be imperfect, but take action in my imperfection. And that's what set me free, Sid.
That's so cool. And you think of it as a parent, you know, for any one of your kids, I mean, anything that they wanted to try or attempt or endeavor, I mean, you're their biggest fan, and there is not one resource that you have that you wouldn't apply to help them win if they were doing something that, you know, that was in their heart to do, that was, you know, lined up with the, you know, something true and wonderful. What would you do? You do everything. And here we are we are the sons and daughters of the Most High. I mean, you're the kid of the king. Don't eat out of the dog food dish.
Yeah. And I still do it. I still do it. Yeah. But do you know what the difference is? The difference is that I realize that God doesn't have a big stick to whack me over the head every time I do it. He kind of like chuckles like, what are you doing, goofball? Get up. You know, it's more like that. It's like a father's love, and it's just awesome. So, I mean, I guess to wrap things up, if we could pivot back to one more thing I wanted you to bring up, and it was the fact that you made a decision. I don't know if it was this last year or before that, to radically increase your prices with your company. And that is a scary thing for people to do. I mean, talk about mental baggage. Like, you're like, if I do this, no one will hire me. But you did it. It worked. Tell us about that.
Yeah, good. I'm glad you asked, because I think it's a big deal for people to understand it's okay to raise your prices. But I was in a poverty mindset for a very long time, so I didn't feel like I deserved very much. I worked really hard. You know, the day I hit $30 an hour of revenue, I felt guilty because that's more than my mom or dad ever made. So it took a long time to get beyond that. So here's what happened. I actually took time to do the numbers. I'm like, what's your profit margin? I figured out after overhead and labor and all the things, like, our profit margin is 23%. And based on how much our total revenue, I was like, that's pretty good. That pays for, you know, wife and four kids. We have a modest home. Everybody's got a car. We don't lack for anything. But I was like, what would it take to make a shift where I could actually, the backstory, I planted one of those mental seeds. I want my employees to be able to buy a house with the money they make working for me. So that takes me out of the, you know, the $10, $12, $14 an hour range. I've got to look at $40, $50, $60,000. And in this town in Missoula, that's a lot. Median income in Missoula is $26,000 a year. So it's like setting a big gap between me and what everybody else is doing in this sort of industry in our area. Okay. So I'm like, in order to do that, we have to have more profit. So if I want to take care of my people, we have to profit more. And I just did the math. I'm like, we need to raise everything 20%. Why 20%? Because that would almost double our profit margin. It's 23% now. If you raise your prices 20%, you don't get a 20% profit increase. If everything else stays the same, all your expenses, you get, based on me being at 23%, we got almost, it was like a 92% profit increase.
That's right. Because the increase above and beyond your cost is all margin.
Yeah.
The extra dollar or $10 or $20 an hour you tack onto your average ticket is all going to the bottom line. It's honestly one of the fastest ways to get your business unstuck. It's like, it's very simple. It costs you nothing as long as you can wrap your head around it and communicate it correctly to your team and your customers. You can instantaneously change the dynamics of your business just by doing what Sid said.
Yeah.
So what happened when you did that?
Well, yeah, it was, you know, first I was like, well, how can we justify the price increase? And then I asked a different question, like, do you have to? Like, I'm not being greedy here, but I want to do something. And then we strive to be the best service that a homeowner can get with any service provider, not just window cleaners, but we want to absolutely dazzle our customers. We've been doing that for a few years, but we go over and beyond with the communication, with the uniform, with the, you know, all the things we do, from the way we answer, knock on the door, to what we say before we step into their home. It's like Nordstrom's versus Walmart. And so, like, our service level is very high. I'm like, that service is worth more. And we can stack on some more service to add, you know, if anybody's concerned about the price increase. And there's some other psychology things that go beyond it with, you know, price structure and psychology. But here's what it did. Sid says, we got to raise our prices 20%. And the first person that calls, when I answered the phone, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I was like, and I gave him last year's price. And so I turned to Cassie, my office manager, and said, look, you're going to have to do this because I'm so emotionally attached to my customers. And I'm afraid that if I raise the price, they're going to quit and yada, yada. So I wrote a little script for her and I said, when they call and you look up last year's price and you verify what they want. And if last year was $300, you say the price for that is $360. You just tell them the new price, but without even saying, we raised your prices. And I said, most people probably won't even notice. And so the result was 90% of the people didn't even notice. 10% of the people would ask, oh, did you raise your prices? And Cassie would just say, yeah, it was about time. That was it. We lost, out of 1,500 customers, we probably lost 10 that said, you know what, I think I need to find somebody cheaper. And I'm like, you know what, here's a couple of people I'd recommend.
Well, that one decision you made had to have added an extra six figures of pure margin to your company, right? Because I know you're on your way heading towards the $1 million mark now, and you got a nice size company and you're growing and stuff and expanding. But think about that, 20% of pure margin. Just as an example, if someone has a $500,000 business, that's $100,000 extra because of a simple phone script and having some kahunas to get it done, right?
Absolutely. And it's shocking, but it's like big doors swing on small hinges is a giant lever that's inside your business. And it's mostly not tapped simply because you're afraid. I'm afraid if I do this, I'll lose a customer. I'm like, if I'm going to lose a customer because I raised the price a little bit, then that's okay. They need somebody else, and so do I, because I'll find another customer that says, man, I'm going to shop there because they're the best, not because of the price.
Yeah, and you'll have so much more margin. You could reinvest into marketing and scale so much easier. You can grab market share. You can just become a complete nightmare to compete with when you're really profitable and you have the money to play with. I mean, did you lose? I'm sure you lost a few customers. What happened on that side of it?
Maybe 10. And I did. I mean, we had a national franchise moved in last year. First time I saw their van, I called them up and I said, let's have coffee. And I welcomed them to the, like, if we're competition, that's great. But if I can help you, I'll help you. And I realized right away that their price strategy was price low, cheap as dirt. And I like, great, I have somebody to recommend. Somebody says, oh, that's going to be too much for us. We raise the price. I'm like, why don't you call Kurt? If you need cheap prices, he's your man. He may not, I don't know about their quality and all that, but like, if you want the best quality on time and all that good stuff, stick with us. If you're worried about price, call somebody else. And here's the guy. It wasn't like, I'm just shooing you off the porch. I'm like, I'm helping. This is what's important to you. Let me give it to you. Man. And so we really look at service, you know, stem to stern, even in getting rid of a customer, not getting rid of somebody wants to quit. We had to fire some customers last year too. And I recommended you should call this person. They're a better fit. And people were happier for it. Wow. Who knew?
How liberating, Sid. I mean, how liberating. You got to spend weeks in a foreign country while your profits and your personal income went up. You only got one text message when you're in Ireland for a couple of weeks. You have a self-managing business. You're on the home stretch. What an amazing thing. And the funny part is this current business in Missoula is about 15 years old. And 2 years ago, you decided to make some changes. And I know everybody listening to this, this has to be resonating with you, right? Because you don't have to have some radical secret magic unicorn fairy dust that you know, you have to scour 7,000 books to find to make significant changes. Look at what Sid did. He's planted the seed in his brain to overcome some mental garbage, or what'd you call it? Mind garbage or something. You did that.
Head trash.
Head trash. Yes. And then he just executed on a few simple things. That's it. I mean, that is a freaking Merry Christmas.
Amen. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, I certainly appreciate your time, and I want people to be able to connect with you if they, you know, want to learn more or talk to you. What's the best way to do that? Should they go to your Facebook page, the Window Cleaning Marketing Facebook page, or is there somewhere else?
There are two ways. One is we have a YouTube channel called Window Cleaning Marketing, and there's a stack of 70 or 80 videos, and some of them are actually helpful. So that's good. A quick connect, if you want to connect personally, on Facebook, my Facebook page is called Squeegeeology. So Squeegeeology. You can, and
Squeegeeology.
Just like it, if you're a window cleaner, you can spell that. And you can message me directly, and I'd be happy to talk to you.
Awesome. And for everybody that's not a window cleaner, who cares? Everything we just discussed is directly applicable to you, my friend. I also want to take a time to just to wish a Merry Christmas to everybody. We're wrapping up the year, and I'm going to get a little preachy on you. If you have neglected your relationship with the Lord this year, isn't this a good time to revisit that? Isn't it time for that little tug on your heart that's saying, come on, come on back to Daddy. Come on, I love you, boy. Come over here. Isn't this a good time as ever? What if you dedicated your life, your finances, and your business to the Lord in 2018? What would happen? Like, who knows? Like, would something bad happen if you didn't act like an orphan, you walked with the Father next year? So I want to encourage you to get on your face and get it done. You know, repent means to change your mind, to turn around. Get it done. It's easy. It's a moment. It's a decision. And it will change your life. It changed mine. It's changed Sid's. And God does have a plan for your life. And if you are really emotional listening to this, that probably means that you are a marketplace entrepreneur. It's part of your calling, your mission, your ministry. And you owe it to the world, and you owe it to your call to step out and to take intelligent risk and to go for it. But you need to only do that when you're in right standing with God. And all that takes is you repenting and going back to Him. That's it. Turn around. Go back home. Merry Christmas. Sid, thank you for your time too.
Thanks so much, Josh. Great to talk to you, and Merry Christmas.
Hey, thanks for hanging out, friends. And from all of us here at the Quick Talk Podcast team, we hope you loved today's show. We hope that you were inspired to become a doer and not just a listener. Apply what you've heard today in your own business and watch things change for the better. Lastly, remember that all the money in the world can't save your soul. Seek first the kingdom of God, my friends. We'll see you next time.
For more information about the Quick Talk Podcast or Joshua's other businesses, visit our website, quicktalkpodcast.com. Have a blessed day.